Are you a math person or more of a literature person? Actually, these two types aren't as different as we often suppose, and some of the world's great works of fiction are more mathematical than you'd think. Here to share some of those surprising stories is Sarah Hart, author of the new book, Once Upon a Prime, The Wondrous Connections Between Mathematics and Literature. Sarah is a mathematician and educator who currently holds the Gresham Professorship of Geometry, the oldest mathematics chair in the UK, and is the first woman to have that position. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
Hi, I'm Sarah Hart. I'm a professor of mathematics, an inveterate book lover, and author of Once Upon a Prime, The Wondrous Connections Between Mathematics and Literature. Today, I'm going to share five of the key insights from my book. Insight 1. Literature is full of mathematical structure. It's often said that mathematics is the language of the universe, and that's quite true. The reason is that the universe is bursting with pattern, symmetry, and structure. Mathematics is the best tool we have for describing and understanding these things, and so of course it's vital to science. But we're part of the universe. We take an innate pleasure in pattern and structure. So it's only natural it would show up in our forms of creative expression, whether that's music, art, or literature. We can see it in poetry, in the rhythmic structure and rhyme schemes of sonnets, or the precise numerical constraints of a haiku. But what's less obvious, and what I show you in my book, is the mathematical structures at the foundation of many brilliant works of fiction. Take Eleanor Catton's The Luminaries, which won the Booker Prize in 2013. It's an amazing book about the gold rush in New Zealand in the 19th century and the intertwined lives of people in a mining community there. It's got everything: murder, love, betrayal, opium, and £4,096 worth of stolen gold. It's a meditation about the interplay between choice and fate and how forces beyond our control can compel us in certain directions. One of the ways Catton illustrates this tension is by using a framework of astrological symbolism, with 12 characters associated to the 12 different astrological signs, and two key characters associated to the sun and the moon. To link in with that, there are 12 parts or chapters, but the really interesting mathematical pattern is that every chapter in the book is half the length of the one before. This halving structure is a fantastic device in the book because you feel events pick up in pace, the gears tightening, the walls closing in on the central characters, and when you get to that very final chapter, you see that unbeknownst to them, their fate has already been sealed. One of the things I show you in my book is a quick way to work out that the total length of the book is the length of the final shortest chapter multiplied by 2 to the power 12 minus 1. And now listen, this is the lovely thing. Remember that stolen gold? That £4,096? Well, guess what 2 to the power 12 is? That's right, it's 4,096. Eleanor Catton hid that gold right there in the structure of the book. It's just a beautiful use of mathematics. Insight 2. A little mathematics can increase your enjoyment of your favourite books. A boy stranded at sea for 227 days with a Bengal tiger named Richard Parker. That's the setting for Jan Martel's wonderful novel, Life of Pi. The boy gives himself the nickname Pi, and as he says, in that Greek letter that looks like a shack with a corrugated tin roof, in that elusive, irrational number with which scientists try to understand the universe, I found refuge. Pi, the mathematical constant relating the circumference of a circle to its diameter, is a fascinating number, and as Pi Patel says, it does indeed go on forever. It is irrational. It cannot be written as a fraction or a decimal that terminates. In Life of Pi, we can never be sure whether Pi's dreamlike experience was real or invented. So in a play on words, the irrationality of Pi is a key theme of the novel. Because the digits of Pi go on forever, we can never know it exactly. For Pi Patel, this is a cause of frustration. He wants things to have clearly defined endings. That's one thing I hate about my nickname, the way that number runs on forever, he says. It's important in life, he says, to conclude things properly. Only then can you let go. But how can the story of Pi come to a finite end, when, as an irrational number, its digits go on into infinity? Yann Martell has a brilliant solution, and the clue is in an interview he gave explaining why Pi's companion is a tiger. It was going to be a rhino, he said, but rhinos are herbivores, and I didn't see how I could keep a herbivore alive for 227 days in the Pacific, so finally I settled on what now seems a natural choice, a tiger. This 227 is clearly carefully chosen. It cannot be a coincidence that the fraction 22 over 7 is a very good approximation to pi. Unlike pi, it is a rational number. We can write it as a simple, straightforward fraction. We can know it precisely. Martell's clever sleight of hand in bringing 22 over 7 to mind with a 227-day voyage appears to achieve the impossible. It makes pi rational. So a little bit of mathematical knowledge can unlock a lovely extra layer of meaning to our experience of this beautiful book, and many others. Insight 3. Literature is full of mathematical symbolism. Fiction is full of mathematical imagery and allusions. Tolstoy, Proust, Vonnegut, they all use mathematical metaphors, and I show you some of these in my book. But mathematical symbolism is present at a much more elemental level. Numbers themselves are an absolutely basic part of the human psyche, and some numbers have immense cultural and literary resonance. In fairy tales, you're likely going to meet 3 bears, 7 dwarves, 12 dancing princesses, and 40 thieves. The number 3 in particular is absolutely endemic in Western culture, and not just 3 little pigs, 3 billy goats gruff, 3 good fairies, and the 3 wishes we're invariably given. How about the 3 witches in Macbeth? And you can't move for 3s in the 3 books of Dante's Divine Comedy, for example. He even invented a whole new rhyme scheme with 3 lines in each verse. It's there in our everyday idioms. 3 cheers, not 2. We learn our ABCs, not our ABCDs. And it's even in political slogans. Read my lips. No new taxes. 3 really is a magic number. And as a mathematician, I've got an idea why. It has some pretty special mathematical qualities. 3 is the smallest number of points that can define a shape, a triangle. With 2 points, you can't escape a boring straight line. With 3, we can move up to the next dimension and spring to life as an actual shape. The same thing is going on in the many stories, and also jokes, that have a 3-part structure. With 3 brothers on a quest, say, the first one fails, that's 1 data point. The second fails too, now it's a pattern, a line. And now when the 3rd brother succeeds, or if it's a joke, does something stupid, that's the surprise, and breaks our expectations, and gives us another dimension of insight, just like making that mathematical triangle. 3, by the way, is also the biggest number of points that you can draw on a page so that they're all equally distant from each other. So it's got connotations of equity and balance as well, just like the 3 Musketeers, all for one and one for all. Insight 4. Mathematics is a thread running through every part of culture. The fact that there are so many profound links between mathematics and literature may surprise us, because as a society, we've forgotten what was natural throughout history until seemingly very recently. Enjoyment of mathematics as a totally standard part of a cultural education. It's not so long ago, in fact, that a president of the United States could have geometry as a hobby and manage to find a completely new proof of Pythagoras' theorem. It was James A. Garfield, if you're interested. Scholars often combined mathematics and literature. Geoffrey Chaucer, author of the Canterbury Tales, one of the first works of literature written in English, also wrote a treatise on astrolabes. Centuries before that, Persian scholars like Omar Khayyam were both poets and mathematicians, and usually astronomers too. Back another few hundred years, and in India, Sanskrit texts on mathematics were written entirely in verse. To fit with the metre of the verse, they would use a huge range of metaphors for numbers. For instance, fire means 3 for the 3 sacrificial fires of Vedic tradition. Hand means 2, as we have 2 hands. And you could incorporate these words into the poetic structure. And of course we have the famous mathematical textbook, the Kama Sutra. OK, perhaps that's not quite accurate, but it does describe 64 arts that women should study. And along with singing, dancing, flower arranging and some other things, there are encryption and arithmetical recreations. In ancient Rome and up until Renaissance Europe, mathematics was part of the 7 liberal arts. You began with the trivium, grammar, logic and rhetoric, the basics of writing, thinking and speaking, essentially, And then you got to the good stuff, the quadrivium, the arts of arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. Arithmetic is number. Geometry is number as it manifests in space. Music is number as it manifests in time. Astronomy is number in space and time. Lovely. No artificial humanities sciences divide. Mathematics is part of everything. It is a cultural touchstone that has been incorporated into literature from the ancient Greek plays of Aristophanes right through to the present day. Insight 5. Some of our greatest authors have been mathematics fans. There are writers who have a real affinity for mathematics. They like it, they're good at it. It's part of the furniture of their minds, and that's completely obvious from their writing. A bit of mathematical insight can shed a new light on their work. It was reading the books of Herman Melville that I was first forcibly struck by just how many mathematical allusions some authors use. It's in tribute to Melville that in the cover art for my book, we can see Moby Dick diving under the ocean. Melville enjoyed mathematics and actually won an award for it at school. The prize, quite naturally, was a book of poetry. What better gift for a mathematician? All his books have mathematical allusions, Moby Dick most of all. As a metaphor for loyalty, he uses a circle, the constancy of the distance from the circumference to the centre. He uses mathematical symmetry as a symbol of virtue. Ishmael tattoos statistics on his body, and Ahab carries out mathematical calculations on his ivory leg. Melville even references a beautiful mathematical curve called a cycloid, which is probably the loveliest curve that most of us have never heard of. The story of the cycloid, that I tell more fully in my book, is a piece of mathematical history that really adds to the fun if you know it. It was studied by Galileo, Descartes, Fermat, and Isaac Newton, among others. It's such a lovely curve that the mathematician and philosopher Blaise Pascal reported that he thought about it to distract him from the pain of toothache. People were obsessed with it and had furious arguments about who had first discovered its intriguing properties, one of which Melville describes in Moby Dick. If we haven't had the chance to befriend mathematics, we miss out on something else, the great solace of mathematical beauty. The great Victorian novelist George Eliot uses a lot of mathematical symbolism in her writing. And no wonder, she loved mathematics so much, it couldn't help but come out in her fiction. She found it real consolation at difficult times. Recuperating from a stressful experience, she writes to a friend, "I take walks, play on the piano, read Voltaire, talk to my friends, and just take a dose of mathematics every day." This was her recipe for mental harmony, and that same satisfaction we get from reading a wonderful novel or an exquisite poem can be found in and comes from the same place as the pleasure of an elegant piece of mathematics. Mathematics is a powerful tool, yes, but it's more than that. It is a search for beauty, meaning, and truth, and of course that's exactly what literature is, too. Inside our greatest literature, inside all of us, there is beautiful mathematics waiting to be enjoyed. Those are my 5 key insights from my book, Once Upon a Prime. I hope that when you read it, you'll come alive to the profound and wonderful ways that mathematics and literature are connected. It'll enrich your enjoyment of the writing and writers you know, introduce you to writing you don't, and give you a whole new way of experiencing literature.
Thank you, Sarah. That was Sarah Hart with 5 big ideas from Once Upon a Prime, the wondrous connections between mathematics and literature. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.